Hi, and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 50. We are here with Simon Crosby, the co-founder of Bromium. Simon, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Gary.
And I'm Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show. This is a unique opportunity. We are live at the Structure Conference in San Francisco, hosted by GigaOm. There was a last-minute opportunity to talk to Simon, so we wanted to grab it. We're outside. It's a great day. Apologies if there's a little bit of wind noise. But we'll just jump right into it. Industry news perspective, Simon, we're here at the show. Give us your take of what's going on at Structure.
Structure for me is phenomenal because here I catch up with the really leading-edge thinking in cloud. I spend most of my time in the enterprise segment, and the enterprise is actually relatively slow in its adoption of new technology, in case we hadn't noticed that. And so the great thing is to see the phenomenal rate of innovation which is happening in cloud, and it happens, you know, this is the epicenter of it. And so for me, this is really cool.
Yeah. Now, you gave a presentation yesterday that included a lot of high-level themes. Give us a few highlights of that presentation before we talk about some of the Bromium-specific things.
Sure. Well, you know, because I live in the enterprise segment, I spend my time with CIOs who all claim to be adopting cloud, and of course, all they're doing is enterprise server build. And I have no problem with that. It's a good thing. They're getting lots of benefits from it, but it's not cloud. You know, first of all, they're building private clouds because they think it's more secure, and that's demonstrably not the case. But at the same time, they have natural IT concerns about security and availability of all of their stuff, and we have to be able to deal with that. So I sit there listening to what most CIOs are doing, and they're basically going down a path of automating IT, but it's still IT.
Right.
Because if you think about what goes on at GigaOm and in general the conversation around here, it's DevOps.
Right.
DevOps is really transforming the whole way the applications are built, deployed, scaled.
Rethink from the ground up versus putting a square peg in a round hole.
Right. The applications are being rebuilt and the infrastructures are just radically different.
We saw that at Netflix yesterday when, I forget the gentleman's name, said, you know, we just decided that we weren't going to try to shoehorn in. We had old applications. We're a 10-year-old company.
Yeah.
But we're not going to shoehorn them in. We're going to redo them.
Right. And so what I've seen happening in the last year is essentially there's this bifurcation happening, which is that enterprise adoption of cloud is basically more server-vert, and it's going down that path of IT automation.
That's a shortcut, server virtualization.
Yes.
Use a little shortcut there.
Yeah. And cloud, as in public cloud, is just streets ahead in terms of infrastructure cost, in terms of automation, in terms of elasticity and pay-as-you-go, just a ton of things. And so I set myself this, by the way, I find myself pulled into this courtesy of the development of Zen, because Zen is powering a ton of these big clouds.
Right.
And that's where we've got sucked. That is, I think we started out thinking that we were enterprise server virtualization guys, but it turns out we aren't. We're doing big DevOps cloud stuff.
Uh-huh.
And now I've found that being pulled back into the enterprise. That is
interesting.
Next-gen enterprise apps, even if they're built in a private cloud, are going to be built in a DevOps style. And many CIOs want a DevOps-style cloud in-house. They want it built on commodity infrastructure. There's not a SAN to be found. It's all local storage. A lot of flash. And they want to do that, but they're still worried about security.
Right.
And then we get on security.
Okay, great. Well, let's take a step back, jump in now to some specific questions. Yesterday, at the end of your presentation, you mentioned that after a very successful career at Citrix following the Zen acquisition, you were off starting a new company.
Yep.
Give us, for the audience who doesn't know about you, which just might be, you know, just a couple of odd folks here and there, but those who don't know, give us the background, sort of pre-Zen up to today.
Well, I was a long time ago, I was faculty at the University of Cambridge, and just about everything that I've managed to pull off since then has been down to that, the brilliant people who come through that. So I was one of the founders of a company called ZenSource, which built the Zen Hypervisor, and CTO there. And then that was acquired by Citrix in 2007. And so we've been on this tearaway ride around Zen, and it's been a real blast. And look, virtualization has delivered enormous benefits: agility, consolidation, availability, all of that stuff. And it's led to the cloud. That is, the AWS notion of an infrastructure as a service cloud depends on that, on the capabilities of an open source hypervisor. So courtesy of open source and hypervisors, we now have cloud, and that's fantastic, and I love that. But there's a big problem out there, and that's security. I think public cloud is more available than anything you could ever build yourself, and I think that the resources that these guys put into the job will always make it more dependable than anything that you build privately with and surround with humans.
Right.
I just know that,
right?
But the problem is that most people think the public cloud as being insecure. And in general, everybody wakes up every day and they find yet another story about yet another thing being compromised.
Right.
So you look at these compromises.
But you know, but part of that is that you don't. There's no publicity around smaller enterprise security failures.
That's
I mean,
true.
They could be happening as frequently, if not more frequently.
The same
but
is
we
true
don't
in
have
availability.
Scrutiny. Yeah, with availability, yeah.
Availability too. So my view of the availability issue. So for example, AWS had an outage, right? Now everybody goes into panic. Actually, you know, it's like an airplane crash. You know, a bunch of people hit the deck, like Reddit. You know, my answer to that is go build a better app. Netflix didn't go down. You know, they figured out how to build a better app.
Right.
And moreover, it's bad in the sense that lots of people go down, but you're generally safer in an airplane than you are driving in a car.
Or walking
so if
across
you do your
the street,
own,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, you know, you're safer in an airplane, and people will focus very intensely on building good airplanes. And by the way, the people who can make big airplanes, there are a few of them. And they'll do a very good job of it, right? Millions
right.
of parts, and AWS will do a good job. Millions
right.
of parts. Probably
right.
Microsoft will do a good job too. And so, you know, the cloud is dev. You know, the people who are focused on delivery of infrastructure as a service will do a better job than you can ever do. That I'm
right.
absolutely
so we make that assumption, which I think
so then,
most of us would agree.
So then
with.
There's a security problem, and so you know, here first observation that people think they can build a private cloud and be more secure because it's all within the constraints of their data center. Well, the problem there is that most attacks occur through the client.
Okay. So it's not. We're not really worried about does the data center have the right level of security? Are they
exactly.
fingerprinting people coming into the data center? Are they,
right.
you know, do they have the right firewall in place there?
Exactly.
It's
so,
on the client side.
Right. So look at the RSA attack. It was a flash attack on a compromised Windows client. Okay, look at the Google Gmail attack from China. It was an IE6 browser attack, okay, through email. So you can build the most secure data center on the planet. You still have the problem that your employee walks the threat into the enterprise every day. And mm-hmm. so the problem is really a consumerization problem. We have this enormous growth in Web 2.0 and next-gen client and essentially public cloud, which is
right.
us as consumers mostly. And we use these things and we walk that into the enterprise, and so what we do as consumers has a far greater effect on IT from a
right.
dependability, reliability, security effect than anything that IT can do from a back-end data center perspective.
So we're getting to some of the reason for being for Bromium. So tell us,
correct.
You know, how Bromium fits into this picture.
Okay, so the problem is then, so what does virtualization do in the security context? Actually, today, very little. Virtualization has elevated a ton of manageability, availability, and scalability benefits, but it has done nothing for security yet.
Mm-hmm.
What we've done is move security functions on top of hypervisors, and they're
yeah.
still...
And, well, and some people would say it's opened some potential loopholes.
Yes.
Some people would say that.
Potentially, yep.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I mean,
okay.
everything's not hard-coded to MAC addresses anymore.
Right. And but nobody has used virtualization technology to try to provide...
To enhance the security.
Right. To specifically go after the continued assurance of the correct operation of software.
Right.
And that's what Bromium's going to do. It's a grand project in the sense that if we pull it off, it'll be unbelievable. And
right.
if we don't, we'll flame out like, you know.
Right. Now, there was a company years ago that I'm familiar with. I had some colleagues who were involved with it called Green Border.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with them?
I am.
Why don't you give us your impression of that company? And I believe they were acquired, and I want to say it was Google, but
yeah,
I can't
Google.
Remember.
That's
okay,
Chrome.
Good.
That's the Chrome browser.
Yeah.
The Chrome browser. So eventually Green Border went off. So they started off
with
this.
So give us some history for people who don't know the company.
So Green Border set off to build the secure isolation layer between any app and Windows. And
right.
essentially
right.
Windows.
Some kind of shell so that if you were got hit by a virus,
yeah, the
it wouldn't go in and wreck your core
yeah.
Windows installation.
That's right. So the problem is that, you know, if you look at an app's interface onto the OS, it's incredibly porous. Not only do you have every API call in Win32, but there's common LA and everything else too.
There are all
and
those files that are just, used simultaneously.
It's impossible, basically.
Yep.
And so
right.
they set off to go and solve that problem. They ended up having to hook Windows in a million places. It was a grand project, went for 4 years, and then they had still only just about done the browser.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they got sold to Google, and that has really worked. That's what's become the browser, the Chrome browser.
Gotcha.
And so Chrome, they've done a fabulous job there. But there are still vulnerabilities, and we saw one just a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
So in general,
so you're saying that the browser did a better job in separating itself from all the hooks into the underlying operating system? Is that a correct assumption?
No, well, certainly by building isolation between this app called the browser and the OS.
Okay, focusing on that
Chrome's,
as the single app.
And the Chrome team has done a great job of that. Right?
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, but there are still vulnerabilities, and it's still a very porous interface. And but then look at the world of the way I look at it. You go down to the lowest level possible in any system, which is the hypervisor and hardware-assisted virtualization. What can I do with a hypervisor? Well, I can make sure that I anytime any piece of code wants to do anything, get a piece of memory, send a packet, read a block, write a block, anything else, I get control because
right.
I am the hypervisor, right?
Right.
Okay. That is the most privileged point of execution you could ever have,
right?
As a gatekeeper. So what can you do with a hypervisor to dramatically change the outcome in terms of continued assurance of running code?
Right.
And that's what Bromium is going from. So we're coming at it from the bottom rather than from the top.
Right.
Based on the observation that coming from the top is infinitely porous and a very, very hard problem to tackle. And if you come from the bottom, then you have this problem, which is that VMs are too big. They're too blobby.
Uh-huh.
So here's the example. If I have a, I could be running in a Windows VM, which is running the latest version, running all the apps of the latest versions, and it's all legitimately licensed and everything else. And then I click on a bad email attachment and we're all done again, right?
That whole virtual machine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do I make sure that can't? And that's a hard problem. Okay.
Right.
Bromium's going after that problem, which is that everything looks good, the code is good, but you don't know about the threat that you have never seen.
Right. Now, you talk a lot about, in the news release that came out yesterday, and I've heard you talk about yesterday, this consumerization, the mix of consumerization and cloud computing that, you know, we all have these devices in our pockets or our tablets. Just tell us a little bit more about it. I'm fascinated by more of the, the impact of how this is going to change, you know, whether companies have bring your own computer to work policy and that whole side of thing. Give us your take on again, the security and virtualization side of this device proliferation where, you know, some companies have lost control. You can't ban people from having an iPad. They're going
to
do it.
That's right. So whenever IT tries to impose control, people go around it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and that's just because people want a good user experience. They want a device or a set of devices that embraces what is increasingly an electronic lifestyle.
Right.
That's what we do. And by the way, we all walk this cloud into the in our pockets. We all have smartphones and so on. We walk this cloud into the enterprise every day. We use these things to get hold of enterprise apps, enterprise data, and that is having a profound effect on IT. So
mm-hmm.
IT cannot rely on the fact that it gives you a lousy device with a lousy user experience and hope that you'll do the best with it.
Right.
Because that just doesn't happen.
Right.
I mean, very simple examples. People want to back up their stuff. They can't do it through IT. They use Dropbox. Or they want it across multiple devices, so they use Dropbox.
Yeah.
Great. So all the enterprise data is in Dropbox. Is that what you want? You know, it's a problem.
So you
might as well embrace it, you know, and then go after solving the real problems.
By the way,
if you do manage to successfully embrace it, then you can get out of the business of worrying about how to back up everybody's stuff. You can just say, pick whatever app you want. Could be Box, could be Dropbox. I don't care. My data's out there.
Right.
It's encrypted at rest, so, and I own the key as the enterprise. So,
right.
Go
as long as I'm aware of it, then I can control it.
Right.
Provided I'm given those controls. Box.net does give a lot of enterprise-level controls.
Correct.
I don't know if
they
Dropbox
don't much,
does.
But they're being forced to because they have recently had a bloody nose as a result of a couple of silly things that they've done.
The Dropbox had a bloody nose.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
When you get to a stage of delivery, how do you see the Bromium solution being? Is it something that enterprises are going to buy?
Yes.
Service providers?
We're going off the enterprise. Consumers, way hard. That
okay.
is, to deliver. Wait, for a startup to deliver anything to the consumer is very, very hard because, particularly this category, because the breadth of devices and the breadth of permutations of desktops and PCs and everything else is just so huge.
Mm-hmm.
You need a much narrower focus on day one. Moreover, consumers don't pay for security. We know this.
Right.
So, and enterprises do.
Right.
That is, there is a very clear value proposition to the enterprise for better data loss prevention and or security, and that's well established. But consumers, you know, they all get McAfee or Symantec as part of their PC when they buy it, and maybe they subscribe to that, but they don't want to pay more for something which they can't prove.
Right.
You cannot prove better security to a customer.
Right. When you describe this solution, I envision two things from a high-level perspective. One, that, you know, enterprises are going to gravitate to this idea of, I have more security and more control over this ecosystem that's been developing around me, which is going to happen whether or not. So there's this security and control aspect that comes through. But then there's also this aspect of, now that I maybe feel like I have security and control, I can do so much more.
Right.
I'm just curious where you see the proposition to your customers as across those two lines, you know, allowing people to adopt more. I mean, how much of it is in the security angle? How much of it is that this is going to give you a much better runway to adopt more and more of these services?
Or IT has to get out of this horrible position of being the bad guy. IT is the bad, I mean, as far as the consumer, me the consumer, when I get a lousy user experience on a device that IT gives me, IT is the bad guy, not the config virus.
Right.
Okay, so IT, we have to get IT out of this horrible problem, I mean, being the bad guy. And so what we have to do is let IT give users a great user experience, let them adopt newer applications that they choose that will make them effective to work.
Yeah, I'll give you a perfect example. I am constantly on the lookout for screen sharing and collaboration tools. Mm-hmm. My last favorite one was DimDim. They got acquired by Salesforce, so they took away the free accounts. So now I'm off to another one. I think I've mentioned them before on the show. Join.me, I use a lot, very simple. But wouldn't it be great if the IT department, when new services came out, was saying, hey, here's a new screen sharing service from a new company. If you guys want to use it, go for it.
Right.
As opposed to me finding it on some blog headline.
Right, but if you just look what's happened on the new device, every has a tablet device of some form or other, or will do, and you know there the employee is going to go and pick an app out of an app store, delivered by the vendor of the device or some carrier,
right? Not their company.
Their company is not going to influence that choice, and they will use that on enterprise data. So, for example, you know, people using all sorts of cool new apps which make them more productive.
Right? Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. The problem for IT is how do they get sufficient control that they can remain within regulatory compliance and make sure that the enterprise needs for loss of data and everything else are met.
Yeah. So what should we know about Bromium? What do we watch for? What can you share with us beyond what we've talked about so far?
You know, very little. There's actually no news around Bromium. The only thing is that we're going to go and solve this problem. And it's great to be back doing some really hard, low-level technical stuff with a great bunch of passionate tech
developers. Yeah, you have a great group of co-founders that was listed in the news release. Maybe just tell us a little bit about the team.
Well, so Ian Pratt, who's the chairman of Zen.org and my longtime friend and co-founder at ZenSource, he's on board. Gaurav Bhanga is the CEO. And he was you might recall a product called Phoenix Hyperspace.
Anybody who tinkered with PCs and computers.
Right. Which was fabulous embedded implementation of the Zen hypervisor to do an altered environment. You know, so he built all of that. He was the brain behind it, and he built all of it. So he's co-founder and CEO. On our board, we have some ex-ZenSource folk too. Peter Levine, mm-hmm. who's at Ignition Partners, at Andreessen Horowitz. Mm-hmm. Frank Artali, who's at Ignition Partners, and he was our business development vice president at ZenSource.
Great.
And then we have George Kurtz, who is worldwide CTO for McAfee.
Excellent. Well, great. Well, we appreciate that overview, Simon. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Gary. We will stay
tuned, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to see in the future. We'll jump into the next section of the show. Where we talk about upcoming shows. I'm not guessing you're not on the show circuit yet this summer, but we have in August, we're tracking the Flash Memory Summit coming up. That'll be in Santa Clara. And then, of course, the capstone for the end of the summer will be VMworld. And Dreamforce is also right about that same time.
You know, I'm a large fan of Brian Madden's, so, you know.
Right, and when is his... The summertime as well, so we'll have to add that to
it. It's in July in Chicago.
For VDI specific stuff.
Desktop virtualization in general, the desktop, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll add that one to the show notes as well. You can find details for those shows at thecloudcomputingshow.com. Let's jump into our tip section where we provide a little tip of interesting companies or services that we have seen, liked, or used. I'll go first. About a year ago, I was at VMworld here in San Francisco walking the startup pavilion. And I came across Abaqo. I mentioned them in a piece I did in GigaOM a year ago. And I just saw them again here at the show. So it's nice to see folks moving ahead. They do a cloud management service. And, you know, there's a lot of options out there. But these guys seem to be really pushing hard. And I give them credit for staying on the trail, following all the cloud folks around. So Abaqo is Abiquo. I haven't used it specifically, but I've talked to them, and it seems like they got some good stuff going on. So that's my pick for the week for the show, abaquo.com. And Simon, your cloud tip, cloud pick.
You know, there's a layer of software that I'm increasingly passionate about, which is which can be used both in the enterprise segment to configure VMs and make sure that applications come up and correctly are instantiated, and also can be used to instantiate PaaS platforms. And I'm a huge fan of OpsCode and what they're doing with Chef.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Yeah, and there's going to be a DevOps panel shortly coming up here that we're going to have to get to. So I think they're live streaming. So if you hear this show and you didn't get a chance to see the panel.
That's infrastructure independent. So it works right on VMware or anything else on Hyper-V. So they would do a fantastic job.
Great. Well, that's a wrap for the show. Thanks again, Simon. Where can people get more info about you, Twitter addresses, web addresses, Bromium?
I'm at Simon Crosby on Twitter. And, yeah,
great.
I'll be posting blogs.
Fantastic. And for me, Gary Orenstein, full name on Twitter. I'd like to thank all of our listeners. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. We also have a show Twitter address, which is just Cloud Show for short. And, of course, you can subscribe on iTunes for the podcast. Just do a search for The Cloud Computing Show or click through the link on the top right of the show homepage, and we'll have a direct link for the iTunes activity there. We'll see you again sometime soon this summer. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, Gary. Great to be here.
Take care. Bye-bye.